Hello and welcome back to the Wide World of Wargaming, Age of Sigmar podcast. As always, I am your host, Alex, with hosts John, Garrett, and Matthew tonight. We have a lot to go over as we continue to take a closer look at the General's Handbook 2019. John, what's on your workbench?
Oh, not a lot, Alex. As you know, I've been traveling for the last week. Missed out on recording with you guys last episode, so it was kind of nice listening to the podcast for the first time without having heard it ahead of time. And I'll tell you what, you guys sound awesome. I think I'm going to listen again next week.
Oh, great thank podcast. You.
Absolutely. Other than that, since I wasn't on before that, I did run a little tournament, Castle Conflagration 18, managed to take second place myself. Local hero of the BAO, Ren, actually won the event. If you remember, he was the guy who had brought an army along just in case we needed an extra player at the BAO, so it was good to see him. Other than that, man, I have been digging into the new General's Handbook. I'm excited to talk about it, excited to see what's happening. Garrett, what the heck have you been up to, my friend?
Well, coming back from a horrible, horrible placing at Triumph, I have decided to abandon my experiment of going back into Khorne, and I'm picking back up my Legion of Night army. So I decided to finally finish getting 10 more Grave Guard, got a full unit of 30 now. So I finished building those out and, just eating up the General's Handbook, trying to see if there's any hidden gems in it and all the
secret sauce.
Yeah. Just reading all of the match play stuff and see if there's any cool stuff in there. Just getting ready for my next event coming up in July. Got to figure out what I'm bringing. So Matthew, how have things been going for you?
Things have been going good, man. I've been super busy with like real life stuff. So I haven't had a whole lot of time to Warhammer in the last week. I have a big Knight Castellan fully magnetized commission sitting on my paint bed that is a pain in the ass, but I think magnetizing the whole thing probably took longer than painting it will.
Oh no, you have to build and paint this commission?
Yeah, magnetizing Imperial Knights is a nightmare.
Yes.
It takes, it's a good, to clean like properly and then magnetize it, it's a good like 8 hours.
Oh yeah, you got to plan it out too.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that you offered those services. I might farm a little more action out to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe magnetizing knights is not the most fun I've ever had.
Okay. Okay. I believe I private messaged you about a Chaos Knight commission potentially down the road, but I was just drunk that whole weekend and I realized that I never followed up on that.
Wait. You were drunk texting paint commissions? What the hell?
I was talking to Matthew.
I got some pictures too. But
yeah, you got some pictures for sure, but we don't need to talk about that. We're going to move on from that. All right, John. I actually am back. Thank you. I did get some games in this weekend with the new General's Handbook. I played against Jeremy, our co-host Jeremy Vessier, and he was nice enough to go easy on me and brought orcs instead of Fire Slayers. He was pretty excited to run a weird fist and something other fist. I don't know what it was, but it was a lot of orcs and they weren't good games for him. But at the same time, he could have just brought Fire Slayers and just been like, okay, I win.
What were you playing?
I was playing my pure Night Haunt list.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. I as much as Legion of Grief is cool, I'm not going to do Legion of Grief for a while because I'm a lot more interested in some of the changes to, pure Night Haunt itself. I think you're going to have to do a little bit more of, it's going to be a matter of like game dodging, I think, in order to do well at the tournament level with most of those types of things. Like at Nova, I would probably have an uphill battle depending on who I play first, and second and what have you. But, because there's not.
I grudge matched you, so I'm going to play you first.
Oh, there you go. Really, I think I can finagle and finesse a win depending on the game, player, mission, whatever. For most, the only one I'm 100% non-confident in is just Fire Slayers. Especially in a Night Haunt over a Legion army, not being able to just, resummon or, recycle units. It's just It's a bad day.
I mean, is that just because you've been playing Jeremy, though? I mean,
yeah, you that 30-man Hearthguard unit is no bullshit.
I will say, I think that's one of the really nice things about the Nighthaunt army is they have so many movement tricks and shenanigans that even in a bad matchup, on the right, if you have the right-ish mission, you can probably just like pull something out of your ass.
Well, see, since that's kind of like the philosophy I don't intend on living by, but just end up living by, I really appreciate Nighthaunt for that exact same reason. But I'm trying to make Legion of Grief work. I'm building lists. Mm-hmm. I'm not super into them. But yeah, you know, there's something we're going to be testing out. That's going to be on my workbench. That being said, you know, we do have a lot to review here, and it is primarily based around, again, General's Handbook. For our listeners, they might recall last week we took a deeper dive into the allegiance abilities and potential changes there, as well as changes that happened to, you know, points. A lot of things went up, a lot of things went down, a lot of things just stayed the same, and some came back that formerly didn't have points. So, you know, one thing, one side note to add to that is an FAQ may need to be coming out, not only for faction specific terrain as the internet has been ablaze with, but also technically the two armies from Forbidden Power, you know, the Defenders of Lothis and the Legion of Grief, technically they're not legal in General's Handbook. They are?
Yes, they are. Yeah. They don't have to be, a faction does not have to be listed. It's not like a battalion or anything like that.
Well, in the General's Handbook, they have a section there that anything is legal as long as it was published after the General's Handbook or is in the General's Handbook as far as pitch battle profiles go. So that's one of the issues.
But I mean, yeah, it's the same situation that like free cities and stuff are in. They're tournament legal. Yeah,
they don't have pitch battle profiles because it's just a
okay. Yeah. Okay. It's, well, then I was just mistaken. An allegiance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it
Legion of Grief is kind of weird.
Like, yes, it's legal. Alex, you are right. There could be like a super weird argument made that it's not.
Well, then that makes me feel better. That makes me want to jump in and make those lists then.
Yeah.
There certainly has been a little bit of panic on the internet after this General's Handbook came out. It's like, you know, calmer minds prevail. Use your calm, logical thoughts and we can continue playing this game, I assure you.
Well, I do think part of that is because the language of this book is much more forceful and strong. Like they say, you must do this, and this is how the game is supposed to be played, rather than in previous books where they're like, oh,
just like do it. Just these are be groovy, man.
Like the language of this book is very strong of like, this is exactly how you should play. And I think that one of the things that is messing people up is they feel that they're being told to play a specific
game.
I don't know. I did not feel oppressed when I read this book. So
I don't feel oppressed. I actually like that they're being more, they're having a stronger language of how they expect the game to be played because they point things, they balance things all around specific, like using realm spells and all that things. And so when people modify that, they're actually kind of changing how the game was intended to be played. And so now GW is taking a more stronger stance of saying, this is do this, like do terrain like this, do scenery like this, do spells like that, and so on and so forth. The language in this book is just very much like, if you're playing matched play, do X.
Well, I mean, that's always been one of those arguable points, I think, you know, right? Is if we are going to alter this game in any way, shape, or form, and just the fact of putting a timer on the game to play it in a tournament starts to change the game, you know, at what point are we fundamentally changing the game? You know, playing without terrain rules, playing without, you know, realm rules, playing without realm spells. At what point have you just made it sort of beginner's Age of Sigmar because you've simplified everything? Yeah. Or as you say, once you've cranked it all up, you've applied every layer and everything that belongs in the game, does it suddenly rebalance itself? And it's only by taking pieces of the game out that we end up with these weird power situations. I mean, what do you think about that, Matt?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to make, like, I think Garrett's argument is correct, like that they're being a little bit more direct in the way they want the game to be played. But kind of two points to that. One, they still make too many mistakes to like if they make a terrain rule that directly impacts and makes like impossible to use half of the terrain in their books, like obviously they're not thinking that through well enough to come out with like a set in stone rule set. Like,
so in other words, they don't write tight enough rules for them to have tight rules. Is that,
yeah. Like if you're going to be direct and say, this is how you do it. Like,
yeah,
make the way you do it a good way. But also kind of, I've said for years and years and years, I wish GW would just say, hey, this is our tournament rules pack. This is how we want GTs to be handled.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with some of the stuff in here. I think the internet is a little more freaking out than normal because of how like strong the language was. And now it's like the community is no longer kind of in charge of making house rules to fix the game. GW stepping in and being like, no, everyone plays.
Yeah. So the internet. I wish they would just out. Like put 2 feet in though. Cause they're kind of like straddling the fence. Like, hey, here's some cool rules you could use for competitive play. And you should use these ones. I wish they would either just like say, here's our tournament pack. This is how it's done. Or don't fucking touch it at all. But like
the mercenary companies in narrative that have pitch battle rules in the narrative section.
Right.
It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish they would just either give us a tournament pack and tell us how you want the tournament circuit ran, or like give us points for the models and that's it. But like the weird like half in half out thing is kind of frustrating as like a tournament player. Again, none of this applies to like narrative players because it doesn't affect them because they just,
I don't know that narrative players really exist. I think even playing narrative games, people use the match play rules. But when I start looking at these things, you know, it's one thing, I guess, as a person who mostly runs tournaments, I don't feel restricted because I still feel that GW is allowing me to run a tournament any way I want. But they've now given us a format, and I know myself, I'm going to automatically absorb and, you know, kind of utilize some or most of that format. And I think that regardless of them saying, hey, this is how a tournament's going to run, they will always look like this, there's going to be that natural leveling effect. Everybody is going to read that document and it's going to have some kind of an effect on how us TOs run events. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I agree. There's like that weird, I feel like it's like a Warhammer urban myth about people saying like, well, GW doesn't just write rules for tournament players. It writes rules for like the masses of Garage Hammer players and stuff. And it's never really made sense to me that they specifically are like, well, we can't just cater to tournament players because what about everyone else? And it's like, well,
yeah,
everyone else doesn't matter because they'll play with whatever rules they're given because it's not as important to them. Like, why not cater to the tournament players? Like
the narrative and
open play people. The narrative and open pay players, they'll just play how they want to play anyways. It does. Yeah. It's not as impactful for them. Like, 100% cater to the tournament play, which I know is not.
No,
like
I agree.
A popular
I think
opinion.
That
I'll probably get some shit for saying that, but it just doesn't. It doesn't make sense to me. Yeah.
Well, I don't think you'll get shit on this podcast, right? We're competitive focused, so this is a safe space to talk competitive play. Oh. It's okay.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But we did lose one of our three followers.
Yup.
Damn it. Now it's just Alex and Garrett.
You do make a really good point, and you know it is absolutely true. You know, the people who really enjoy, you know, playing Beast Claw in their, you know, in their escalation, you know, themed storyline, you know, setting, they're going to continue doing exactly what they did. They're not making any changes here, you know? And it is going to be about making sure that the rules are tight, which, like you mentioned, Matthew, is some are, some aren't. But you know, it's a slow grow. Now, you know, John, you did mention that there is a tournament packet system. You know, I actually might have missed a little bit there. I saw like rules and ideas and kind of a rundown on how you might want to run a meeting engagement tournament. But there was more for strictly match play.
I mean, that's what I thought I was looking at. I mean, I haven't dove into it too far. In fact, you know, what we should probably do is on a future episode, we should just kind of dive in and go through both the meeting engagement and match play tournament formats, because I believe both of them are in there, and kind of hash through that. But for now, you know, I myself have been just, man, I'm looking at some of these new missions, and that's why I haven't really even focused so much on the tournament format. When I saw it's there, but I'm looking at some of these new missions, and I don't know about you guys, but I am really anxious to roll some dice and try some of these out. I don't know, Alex, have you actually had a chance to test out any of the new missions yet? New battle plans?
Yeah, you know, I did play a couple of them, as mentioned, with our good dear friend Jeremy. We played. Let me take a look here. We played. Total Commitment was the first game we played, and that one, if anyone can recall, was one that you really only saw like one out of three tournaments run because of that nightmare. That nightmare ladder deployment, and that's completely gone now. It's essentially. Total Conquest, you're right. Total Commitment, my bad. That was the one with, the hot dog deployment, rather. And I believe it was 15 inches out originally for Total Commitment.
Yeah, that was the one that got some nice first turn charges.
Here's a couple of unique things here. Jeremy and I actually talked about this a lot because at his house, you know, he's got a few fat mats, a whole table, and he was really trying to buy some fat mats from a local player in the Pacific Northwest who has a table, and Matthew's seen it before at Blue Wizard, but they're like normal grass or like snow tables, and there's just very thin gray lines across the entire table that are marking off.
Dude, those mats are amazing.
Exactly, that are marking off, you know, halfway across the board, cut laterally, vertically, diagonally, and like different things. So in almost every objective setting of game, like, yeah,
specifically for AOS.
So it has, yeah. So it's for pretty much any game. It has like a crazy grid system laid over it that is like there's circles, diagonals, vertical, horizontal line, like every measurement you could think of. But it's in like the lightest, like sketch marked gray ink. Like unless you're looking for the lines, you don't see them at all.
Yeah, so they don't take away from your game, and you don't even. It takes like 5 to 10 minutes of the guesswork of your game between, oh, I'm holding that objective. No, you're not. Or even just like, where do I put the terrain or where do I put the objectives? It takes so much immediate guesswork out, you know?
Oh, that sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, the problem with this new Total Commitment is it actually goes away from that type of deployment because the mission, the objectives are now deployed differently. You know, as we can recall, Total Commitment used to have two objectives in your opponent's zone, in your territory and your opponent's territory. And they were both just at the edge of the long. They're basically in the corners of the map, right?
Right.
This one, it is a little different. You know, it is going to be the board is cut diagonally. And the objectives are placed 6 inches out and 24 inches up on one side. And then on the longer table edge, it's going to be placed 30 inches in and 6 inches out. So you're not using 36, you're not using 24. It's just literally 30 inches in. So it's a little oblong in this one. And I got to give the people, I got to give Games Workshop lots of credit. Every single mission except for Relocation Orb actually distinctly tells you how many inches every objective needs to be from each other or from the board edge, which, you know, I knew previously was a little bit of a point of contention.
Yeah, they've done a great job of like relaying these out and what have you.
Yeah. So, you know, Total Commitment hasn't really changed as an object or as a game or as a mission outside of this new deployment zone. And, you know, with these new deployments, you are 18 inches away from your opponent. So that hasn't really changed all that much either.
No, I like these ones where you start up real close to each other, you know, just like get right into the action, get that melee going, just kind of tear each other up. Maybe turn one takes forever, but after that, you know, top of two, everybody's dead. And by turn three, the game's pretty much over. So.
Exactly. Exactly. And our second game that we had played was actually Places of Arcane Power. And that one was also split diagonally. And that one, you know, it's similar to the previous version. You know, there's one objective in the middle and two that are 18 inches out from both corners diagonally. Yeah, it's 100% identical. The only change that was made to this was actually a change in the rules and how it scored.
Oh, good, because it needed that. Yeah. Okay, this so, is one of Matthew those missions love that kind the of new change, actually then. Controls how you build your army, yeah.
Yeah, so instead of having only wizards or heroes with artifacts holding the objectives, it's now just every hero. So that makes things a lot easier.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, but it makes some of our lives a little easier.
It's just an angled version of three places of power. Oh, yeah. I mean, I really like that change because the previous change, the previous mission were like Khorne and KO and dispossessed players and Fire Slayer players. Like, it was really frustrating because you had no wizards unless you allied them in, but then you're forced to ally them in or you got to like struggle to find relics and stuff. And it was really frustrating. This just got rid of that. Really like it. But I mean, it is a compared to the other 11 missions, this one feels
why do you say that?
Simple. What?
Yeah, well, why is that?
That's the one thing I'll say about this one. Well, all the other missions got like very large changes, or not very large changes, but very interesting changes that make them, like as you're saying, the objectives are not exactly placed on you know, consistent placements of like 36 inches or whatever, of some really weird deployment zones. And then one mission has 8 objectives now instead of 6. Just a lot of kind of very radical changes, I think, from the original 6 missions we had. That, and this one just is plain, you know, three equally spaced objectives down the middle, split 24 inch gap, heroes control, like super simple compared to three places of power. So,
you know, it's interesting that you make that note. I wonder if we see that because this was one of those games that was pretty universally despised in the old General's Handbook.
Yeah.
And so they kind of just were like, well, here, we're going to make an effort to make this one not the mission that everybody hates. And what they ended up with was a piece of, you know, vanilla, you know, boringness, as you were.
But I do like the vanilla boringness because at least it's consistent and you don't run into problems where literally the mission beats a player. Like, this is a simple mission.
I certainly have encountered that one. What do you think about that, Matthew, with playing Eidnith in Places of Arcane Power, one of your previous former favorite missions?
Yeah, I think I'm like 0-1 on that mission at tournaments.
You and I tie on that
actually maybe 1-1. I think I've played it twice, but yeah, my list up until a month ago had 0 wizards in it, so that was always a rough match. And yeah, one artifact and Deepkin characters aren't really known for being the most durable.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure that this is going to add a lot more variability to you. Not necessarily on how your army is going to move around the table, because we all know how that works. But it definitely gives you a lot more ability to score, so that's great.
Yeah, I'm just really glad, because I was struggling competitively with that army, so I'm glad that it'll be better now.
Nice.
Always humble, always humble.
Struggling so hard.
Well,
I mean, Relocation Orb did keep the wizards and guys with artifacts of power count as 20 models. So having wizards and artifacts of power still matter for one mission.
Yeah, but it's not the only way to score that one. And Relocation Orb, though it's a convoluted mess when you look at it on paper, it doesn't look that bad. I think it's a little less complex than it was before with the old kind of grid matrix system.
Yeah, it's actually a lot simpler and a lot cleaner. There's instead of like 12 different places it can go, and you know, it moves a whole bunch and it can jump all over the board. It only has
five locations spots
it can move to. And if it moves too far, it just resets to the middle instead of having to walk its way back.
Yeah, exactly. Very nice.
And sadly, they did not fix probably my least favorite part of this mission, where just by going second, you score.
Dude. Yeah. That's
like, so my friend James, who was on an earlier episode at Adepticon, he went second turn one, or he went first turn one, he went first turn two because he was forced to, and then he tabled the guy top of turn three, and so the guy scored turn one and turn two, so he had six. And then James never won a priority roll and lost, even though
that's exactly what happened to Matthew.
In turn two or
oh my god!
Want to hear a funnier story again? I did the same thing, except I didn't read the mission. So I,
James read the mission. He just could not win a priority.
Well, Matthew, tell us about your story.
Yeah,
he could not win.
Same thing. I won priority both times. I just didn't read the mission, so I thought it was like 3-3 when I tabled him on turn three.
No.
Nah. 9-3. Oh, yeah. Oh, he actually outdropped me, made me go first, and then I just won priority both times. So we just alternated back and forth, and I was like, cool, I'll just keep this alternating and smash you off the table. my bad. I killed all but like maybe 300 points of his stuff turn one in my Alpha Strike 2. Like, I had no reason to take the turns. I was like, might as well take him because I won priority. He was just running around with like 10 skinks and a caster.
And a funny look on his face, a little smirk, right? He's like, oh, really? Okay, sure. It's one of those, are you sure you want to do that?
So, yeah, turn three, we roll the dice. He has like 8 models left, and I win priority, and I'm like, do you want to keep playing? Like, is there any point? He's like, what do you mean? You can't win. I was like, what? Oh, yeah, that's on me.
Yeah, you're like, that's what I meant. Obviously, I can't win. No point going forward.
Quick recovery on that one, yeah. Oh, boy.
My bad.
Hey, you know, one of the other things on this relocation orb is it's one of two missions that uses this new diagonal deployment. I would call it the new, easier to set up diagonal deployment. What do you guys think about this little kind of wedge shape with sort of from the middle to the corner map that they have set up?
Well, I, as a Legions player and placing my grave sites, I don't like anything that has a no man's land. So I'll just start off by saying,
oh, okay.
Just because when there's a no man's land, it heavily restricts where I can put my grave sites. And that's always two of my grave sites. And that's always frustrating.
It's funny you say that. As a Skaven player, I'm always enjoying no man's land as a great place for the Gnawholes to drop. Well,
you can't place your Gnawholes now. So,
yeah.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I can. Pretty sure that there was never a danger of me not putting them on the table.
We'll give it like a week and they'll resolve that issue.
Nope.
Yeah, I did not panic. I saw that. I'm like, oh, well, there's a conflict. So we will just resort back to the rules in the Skaven Battle Tome until further guidance.
Since I am a fully functioning adult, I will be logical.
Yeah. Well, you know, another important thing to note, too, when we do take a look at these...
wild decision.
Yeah.
I know. I'm a radical like that sometimes.
As far as answering your question, John, I do like that it's a lot easier to draw your line. Because having to draw a center line down the table or memorize some magical measurements or something that to set up your deployment zone can be very frustrating. Having just draw from a corner to halfway down the table, that's your deployment. That's your territory.
That is simple.
Like, that is nice and simple. I do like that.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, I think it's real nice. And of course, Total Conquest is the other one that they've set up like that. So another classic mission. And it's one of these things you won't see relocation orb very often at events, but I think Total Conquest is one of those ones.
Yeah, and that was the one that I meant to talk about earlier with the janky mechanics on deployment. I love the new deployment for this one. It is super simple and easy. For our listeners out there that don't have the book, it's still split diagonally, but your entire territory is 24 inches on your right side, 24 inches up the board, and then the exact corner of the left side of your table, the long side of your table, that corner. So it's basically just a thin, acute angle on your side. That's it. And this is one of, I think, two missions now where you just place your units wholly within your territory. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, it says must be holy within their own territory.
Before we move forward, though, it is also important to note that you know, the
four missions
for the tables, tables 1, 2, and 3 for match play missions. Table 1 is still and forever and always the 3 missions right out of the rule book. They haven't changed. They haven't changed before. They haven't changed now. It is what it is. Yeah. You know, for the first mission, though, in table 1. Are you guys there? Okay, for mission for that first one, you know, the knife to the heart, that one did see another interesting change. And, you know, for all of us who have played it before, it is the two mission objective or the two objective mission one. And the objectives are now closer together. So Jeremy, who had already had an easy time with this first Fire Slayers, is probably just even more excited. Rather than just 20 inches up diagonally from the corner, they're now just 12 inches up and 24 across from your side. But if you guys have noticed, this is a little bit of a strange deployment area because it is in an L shape between you get your first two Realm of Battle boards, essentially, you know, 2x2 squares on your side, and then you have one more basically in an L-shaped deployment.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is we've seen this L-shaped deployment before. When Age of Sigmar first came out, this was one of the original map styles that came out with the original game.
Mm-hmm. Did it?
Yeah, yeah. Like back before we had General's Handbook or any of that, this was one of the original map layouts. Yeah. And in fact, I remember looking at this map and saying to myself, "Oh man, I wish 40K had this instead of the Vanguard deployment. How much? What an easier way to set up a kind of quote diagonal board effect, but using the squared off L shape makes it so much easier to measure." And of course, what you end up with, as you were noting, is basically the objectives form a square. So they're, you know, 24 inches apart from each other on each leg of that square, and you're battling over a little square in the center of this board. So it should make for some fun missions.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And the objectives, of course, are a little bit closer. To reiterate Total Conquest 2, objectives haven't really changed with that one. They're still pretty much exact. They have. Now there's just basically a four corners matchup. But, you know, rather than kind of a weird oblongy version. Now, here's one that we had talked about right before recording. And I know, Garrett, you're very excited about this one. Duality of Death has had a pretty big change in their deployment. For all of us, we all remember the deployment for Duality of Death basically being 12 inches up and basically a good, you know, 36 inch or 24 inch deployment in the middle of the table width wise. Now it's just 12 inches up and 12 inches over on two different sides of your long board edge. So you have a space in the middle, and you have to put your force between two separate territories, A and B.
Yep, you're 24 inches from your opponent, and you're 24 inches from yourself when you're set up like that.
Matthew, what do you think about this one?
I mean, you could castle in one corner if you so choose.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like these missions. I don't know. To be honest, any mission that has more than two objectives, I'm a pretty big fan of, like, regardless of what the rules are. The deployment's neat. They kind of used to frustrate me, to be honest, like the weird deployments that a lot of the AOS missions have. But the more and more that I've played, the more I kind of appreciate not just like
Dawn of War gets a little old, 12 right?
inches off the table edge. Yeah. On the flip side of that, the stupid staggered one, I always forget the name of it. It has, yeah.
Old
it's
Total Conquest.
That's a pain in the ass to set up.
Good. Which doesn't exist anymore.
Perfect. So yeah, it's kind of cool to have that middle ground where it's like a little bit different deployment, but you also don't have to spend 17 minutes with a tape measure before the game starts, yeah, like plotting out where your actual deployment zone is.
Yeah, this one in particular, I mean, why I was really excited about it is by, so you need to have, so your army can or cannot be split into two halves. Basically, you have to decide, do I want to castle up into one of my 12 by 24 inch tiny little circles, or do I want to split my forces? Because a lot of armies require synergy, like Nurgle, Khorne, all these guys kind of like to, you know, have a giant death ball that just goes around the field, having a bunch of synergies. Well, this kind of forces you to split your army like completely. Like other missions, like old Total Commitment, had the four objectives that are in the far corner, so you kind of had to split your
army. A balanced army should be able to hit on two fronts at least.
Could though. Still spread around the middle. This does not let you. Yeah, but this, like, this straight up says, no, you can't even be in the middle in any way, shape, or form. You cannot have screening units in there. You can't have anything in there. Nothing can be in the middle, which makes a lot of armies like Deepkin, Legion of Night, Skaven, Stormcast, any Nighthaunt, anybody who has any sort of deep strike or deployment trick mechanics, they have this giant hole in the middle of your deployment zone that they can go into turn one with nobody can stop them. They can just put a gnaw hole right in the middle of their opponent's territory and have gnaw holes in there too, and just like drop 40 storm vermin right in the middle of your two with double death frenzy and throw cogs up and charge.
Sorry, how big is that area?
Turn one, 24 inches wide.
Okay, yeah.
There's a 24 inch gap between the two deployment zones.
You can fit something. I mean, like Deepkin, for instance, like you can't fit a 12-man
you're basically left with what, a 6x6 area if you're staying 9 inches off each border, so you have a little 6x6 square that you can drop into.
Can you go all the way 6 inches up? Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, like literally basically they have 24 inch wide, 12 inch up, 24 inch wide, 12 inch up, two different paths.
Yeah.
That's their territory. The whole 20,
you probably can get most stuff in that. Yeah.
And it's 36 square inches, so 1 inch bases, you could get 30 guys in a character.
You can't get 12 eels.
You know. Eels, their problem is if they were off the bases, you might be able to get them in there, but but what I actually see happening here is, for example, dropping a gnaw hole in the middle, and since both objectives are in the center, my opponent's going to spend a whole bunch of time worrying about that gnaw hole when I'm just going to run up and grab the objectives from the middle anyway. So that's, you know, worrying about that gap is going to do more for me than what I would actually do with that gap.
Yeah, I think this mission is going to, I think it's really going to change how people approach the game of it. I really like that because it's rather than kind of having these pile in the middle hammer, this forces you to split. And then if you have deployment tricks, as John said, you can then kind of create a mind game of, do I try to block that or do I just let them come and cast?
And honestly, it's just doubling down on that, like the mind game effect of null deploying stuff. Like, in all actuality, like six Morsar Guard and a Soul Scryer aren't super, super scary, but it kind of is when you don't know where they're going to go.
Especially since you can, like, you have to now have two sets of screens, because if you split your army in half so you can score both objectives, like if you only heavily screen
that,
one side, then the more
that could mess some people up in the fact that you have to screen four. I mean, you have to make two L's with your screens. So, like, a lot of people don't have that much chaff. Some people are going to have to be screening with stuff they don't want to.
Yeah. So, I stayed up at one night just thinking about this mission, like, stuff like that, where it's just, like, people bring a bunch of marauders as their screen.
Yeah, that is a good point. I would say probably at least 50% of armies don't have four units of chaff to screen with. Most are, like, 2 to 3, I would say, is pretty average. Like, a lot of armies on one of those lines will have to put something.
Oh, that's a good point.
Like,
as soon as they offer up a weak edge, that's where we're going to drop in.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's the edge you hit with whatever deep striking Stormcast, whatever Deepkin, name it.
So
anything
that one's
going
to be a really interesting mission. I'm really excited to see how it turns out because, you know, of course, not only do we have this new and very unique mechanic for deployment, but this is still that hero objective mission. So
except
what's up?
sorry to interrupt, but they made it so Battleline can also score them now.
Yes, yes. That was another major change to scoring in this mission.
Well, that's a nice addition. Battleline and Heroes, right? So it's not everything in your army. It's not that fast cavalry unit, but Battleline, hey, you know, the meat of the army. Well,
that's the other thing. So the hero-based missions were always unique in that once a unit takes it, they control it until they die or they leave them. And so they used to be only like behemoths or heroes or single models would take them and then people would have to shift them. But now an entire Battleline unit, once they grab that objective, it can't be stolen from them until that unit dies or it leaves the place. So like the Realm of Shadow spell that lets you move a hero, you can't move a Battleline unit. So this, you can just like throw 40 clan rats on this. And even if they kill you down to one clan rat, that one clan rat will hold it for, even if there's 100 other people on it, because he's the one who took it first.
Yeah, I mean, this one still is a little tricky because remember, just like these missions and how they were previously set up, you still have to completely be on and hug the objective.
Well, does the whole Battleline unit have to be wholly within three or just within three?
Well, I think within three. Otherwise, you know, plague monks or clan rats or whatever, it would be impossible.
But the first Battleline unit that arrives there takes the objective.
I do want to move on and take a look at other objectives, however. One of my favorite deployments here is going to be the Battle for the Pass now. You know, Battle for the Pass hasn't really changed in the structure to the objectives, but the deployment is a triangle. The deployment is a triangle that's 24 inches up on the middle of the table, on the short ends of the table, and it just goes to the corner, to the long edge corners. And that means that you don't have one objective that you are 100% completely able to guard, and then the two objectives up the middle that you can lightly, you know, just breeze, put a unit within 6 inches of round one. Now you have to kind of move your army into the first objective that's in your territory, and then you got to branch out from there. Are you guys?
I like the layout for this one, honestly. As I don't know if you remember, but when I did the team missions for the BAO, I used a very similar layout with a triangular sort of setup like this. In that one, though, the players started a little bit closer. Here, they're still 24 inches apart. I myself would like to see this kind of triangular setup, but maybe reaching to about 12 inches apart so that there you could maybe get one unit or one character really close to engagement, but not enough to where you could get a bunch of things in there. As it is, it just makes it hard to protect that objective, and it kind of just crams you a little harder into the backfield. So it's cool, but I'm not super excited. Again, I would like it to reach a little closer to the center to get it my way. How about you, Garrett? Have you thought much about this one?
Yeah, I'm similar in the thought process. I was looking at this. So first of all, the objective is 6 inches behind the tip of your triangle. So you can surround the objective turn one, but then you kind of just try to score the two side objectives. You're really petering off with that sharp edge of the triangle. So it's going to take slower armies like Fire Slayers are going to be really hurt by this, because they basically have to, if there's any sort of terrain in the middle that like screws their spearhead down the middle, they're going to have to take an extra like 3 inches coming from the edges to try to get those side objectives. They basically took a large deployment zone and then cut off like half of it. So it has a very small deployment zone. It's definitely going to benefit, again, armies that have deep strike mechanics or outflank or ambush mechanics, because they don't need to worry about not starting close. They could just come off as they always do normally.
Yeah. Another really big change is going to be the one that came to Starstrike. Now, Starstrike hasn't really changed in how player territories work, but it's now changed with how the objectives are dropped down. As we all know, the Starstrike, you know, the first objective in the middle of the table comes down at the start of the second battle round, and then the objectives in each player's territory are dropped on the third battle round. But rather than rolling a D3 and seeing if it's on in one side or the other side or the middle, now it's going to be rolling a 2D6 and looking at the grid that's on the battle plan sheet. So you can either have an objective that's 12 inches up and only 6 inches to the side, or you can have it, you know, right in the middle as normal. So I find this one to be really interesting because when I first saw it, I went, oh crap, this would be super hard against a slow army if like the objectives are both on exact opposite, you know, 6 inch out, you know, corners of the map. But, you know, the average of 2d6 is not snake eyes or boxcars. So the likelihood of you having extreme angles in this one is very low. So more often than not, especially with a 2d6, Starstrike is going to very much be, you know, both armies in the middle more often than not.
Yep, that's exactly what's going on here. At first glance, you're like, ooh, look, more granularity. Ooh, that'll be interesting. We'll get kind of all over the place. And even if it was an equal chance to land at any of those 12 spaces, I don't think that alone would make that much of a difference to the mission. Now the fact that it's going to rely on averages, so most of the time, you know, you're going to get that 6, 7, 8, and you're going to land right in the center, as you already talked about, Alex. I think that is now not, well, it's not on the surface. That's the real big change to this particular mission, is that instead of, oh, I got screwed because it landed on the wrong side, it's, yeah, most of the time we're just going to fight in the middle. So this is going to be a big pile up in the middle kind of a mission. And other than that, they haven't really changed the mission. Like, that's why I say, is it, they haven't changed it. They've just mellowed it out or softened it. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, that's what I'm seeing on this one. Though it should be fun, but meh.
I think this is a nice balance to a lot of the other missions that have the restricted deployment zones, because they now this is one that benefits like slow armies because everything will pile in the middle and they can kind of synergistically just kind of jump in the middle and score everything, as opposed to the ones where that benefits armies that deep strike a lot. And I actually really, really like this change because I think it definitely is a nice mix into the whole order. And I like that because from before you could have very extremes where they land on opposites or lands exactly where your opponent needs it, because there was only three options. Now with 12 options and, you know, a 2/3 chance of landing in the middle board, it feels like you have more control as a player, that you don't just get screwed by leaping way over there, which was my original problem with Starstrike.
Yeah, and then on occasion it will still land way over there, right?
Yeah, exactly. But like, that's like one of those things, like, oh my god, we rolled a 2, it's way over there.
I better run.
But like, when you're coming at, yeah, I know. And that's again, with, I think one of the things we really love about Warhammer is those random chances for just the extreme to happen, and then you get that excitement of trying to deal with that. So, but on, when you're coming at a, how to approach a mission, you always go with the averages. And so that's why I really like that you can now approach it like before with it, you know, same chance of landing anywhere. You're just like, well, it could just land over there and then I'm screwed. Now it's like, okay, I think I can assume it's going to land probably within this vicinity. So I'll plan on that and then have to react otherwise. So I think this, it adds a new excitement to this. And so, because before I think people were really cagey on these missions, waiting to see where they would come, now you can kind of pre-play a lot, and so I like that.
Yeah, it's there's a lot to work out here. Now here's another one that really stands out, and actually this one seems to me to be probably my favorite change, and that's the change to Scorched Earth. For Scorched Earth, you know, the mission where you can burn your opponent's objectives, it's no longer, you know, a pitched battle deployment. It's no longer just 12 inches up from the long edge of the table. It's now 24 inches out from the short edge of the table. So, you know, it's now hammer and anvil style deployment. And the objectives are not 6 objectives in a row on the side, the long edges of the table. Instead, it's 8 objectives now, 4 in your deployment, or 4 in your territory and 4 in your opponent's. So essentially, your opponent has access to, you and your opponent both have access to your frontline objectives, and then you really got to push hard through in order to hit the back two objectives, especially if you don't have one of these ambush or deep strike mechanics.
Yeah, I'm really liking what I'm seeing here, Alex. I tell you what, Scorched Earth, as you guys know, one of my absolute favorite missions in the old General's Handbook. And to me, this just adds on another little bit of excitement to it. It's a little less in your face. There's kind of now a defensive mechanic. And eight objectives on the board, I don't think I've seen that ever in either Warhammer 40K or Warhammer Age of Sigmar. So just having that many objectives, it's like everywhere you go, I'm trying to like visualize the density of that many objectives. And now, if you think about it, with the new terrain rules, right? Terrain is supposed to be 6 inches from the edge of the board, 6 inches from other terrain, 3 inches from objectives. Not a lot of space left on that Scorched Earth board for your faction terrain. No, to lay not, down, not that's for sure.
We'll I think we know what's going to happen in the FAQ. And it's funny because this gets brought up so often. And, you know, Matthew, I know you've been seeing it left and right, you know, the discussion about the faction terrain. And yet it seems very front and center with the answer and what the solution is.
Oh, yeah, guys, you know, I don't know. I just haven't been paying attention lately.
Oh, yeah, so, well, you know what? That's good to know, Matthew. I did not realize that he jumped off. So, we miss you, Matthew. I'm glad we were able to have you on. And, just got the message.
Yeah, I think he was having a little internet connection there. We lost him just a couple minutes ago.
Oh, you know, he's got to put the kids to bed. He's got to be a good dad. We got to give him a round of applause for being a good father.
It's nice to have him for a minute when we can. I tell you, I have nothing but sympathy and respect for that. You know, I myself have four kids. All are, of course, grown up and moved out of the house. So now it's just Donna and I. So what can I say? It's sex and hobbies all the time around my house. But when there were kids, there was a lot more things to deal with.
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? Thank you, Matthew, for being on again, taking time from a busy paternal schedule here. I really like Scorched Earth, and I think that he's going to like it even more, especially with how mobile his army is specifically. You know,
jumping into the backfield and just tearing it up. Oh, again, I just cannot wait.
Most of the armies you have are going to have a real pleasant time with most of these missions, and I am starting to see a theme here that I didn't notice before when I was looking at it by myself. Having this discussion with you guys today really does point out the fact that, you know, being able to have a mechanic that lets you move around the board, not just, you know, cogs that make you go up the table or the boat to, you know, scoot your way up the table either, but being able to ambush or deep strike or come from the underworld, what have you, is going to be huge in a lot of these missions, specifically with the idea of getting into that backfield. So yeah, this brings a whole nother dynamic about adding proper but effective amount of bodies, just in case you do have to bubble wrap, even with things that you don't really want to bubble wrap with.
And you know what, any veteran general will tell you the game is won in the movement phase.
Now more than ever.
And now,
you know, when we do take a look at some of these other changes, not a lot, we've really covered a lot of them that were the most significant changes. Some honorable mentions here would be focal points. Focal points is still objectives that are 18 inches out from the center. And they are still, it's still a five objective mission. But rather than having a vertical or a horizontal deployment, it is now just a standard pitched battle style deployment, or actually it's 15 inches out from the long board edge. And the objectives are a little bit more like a square rather than a diamond. When you look.
It just rotates as one. Objectives and all.
Yeah, exactly. John, what were some of your. Oh, no. You said it matches the name better.
Sorry, what was that? Yeah, that's all.
What
I
were your thoughts on Better Part of Valor? Layout.
Better Part of Valor. It's Yeah, it's your classic line them up and go kill somebody mission. So I don't know. It's okay. It's the one say, it's what's it say? If the player gained the control of the objective in this turn, they score one victory point. So you get a point for holding them. So what in my armies, you know, basically you flood the backfield, you hold your own objectives and you go take them from the other guy. It's classic AOS in this time. Am I the only one that's noticing, though, that as I look down the line here, let's see, there is only one, two, I guess there's still a few. I say it seems like there's not a lot of the Dawn of War style deployments. There's a whole lot more of these long ways deployments in these various missions, depending on how you interpret these maps.
I think the
I think that's kind of nice as I look at these as a package.
I think the original six missions are mostly the Dawn of War style, so they tend to try to shy away from those in general. I think that's the reasoning behind that.
Oh, right. That would make a lot of sense. Sure. Yeah, and you're right, Alex. We did manage to cover all of them. I mean, other than you know, Better Part of Valor, which is, you know, your basic line up and go grab them objective kind of admission. We still have Shifting Objectives, which is, you know, they rotated the map. It used to be a long ways deployment. Now it's a pseudo Dawn of War deployment, but you're starting in the first 12 inches. And other than that, you roll a dice and one of them is going to be worth more points each turn. And you know, I myself have always enjoyed that mission. I don't know about in a Dawn of War deployment. I actually kind of thought it worked out well with a what I call the long ways or hammer and anvil type deployment, to use the 40K term. So what do you think, Alex? Shifting objectives rotated 90 degrees. Do you think that's an improvement?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that this is going to make, you know, we're spreading things out. The objectives are, for most missions, you know, the objectives are a lot closer in. And now that this one is not going to be all three objectives in a straight line within 24 inches, but rather, you know, quite a bit longer, it's going to make things a little different in how this mission is played specifically. So you have a lot less, you know, a fast unit that was holding one objective that's a priority can't as easily fly over to the other priority objective if we switch from one side of the table to the next. So it's going to add a little bit of a variability here. And I do like the way this one, it works out now. You know, it's last time I played the Shifting Objectives, I fought against Michael, and Michael's, it was before Heathen Knights had a book, but he still played him incredibly well. And he was so nervous about Night Haunt Deeps, or, you know, coming up from the underworld, that instead of having all 60 demonettes on the board edge to just hit the objective in the middle and just have 60 demonettes and the rest of his army there, 30 of his demonettes were just all on the backfield to block me out from deep from striking his back line. And that won me the game because he was so nervous that he didn't have the support he had on the objectives when he needed them. And now with this type of mission, it just makes it way easier for him in this instance. These armies that do have, you know, these Legion armies or Heathen Knight armies that have a lot of huge units that just hit like a brick shit house. Because now they have the ability to just move up to the table and not necessarily worry as much about backline harassers. Garrett, you seem like you have had your hand up for a while. What's up?
I just wanted to mention on John's comments on Better Part of Valor, it is actually not a simple mission. Because the only way to, just like the previous Better Part of Valor, the only way to score is to burn your objectives, and the number of points you get is based off when you burn your objective. One of the larger changes in this is that you can't burn until turn two, which on its own I think would be not a great change, because that means the game basically you concede on turn two rather than turn one, because many armies can burn all six objectives right away. But I think the big part about this is by shifting the deployment zone to hammer and anvil, you can more easily prevent an opponent from getting all six objectives right away because you have more room to surround the objectives. And so I think that's one of the key changes to Better Part of Valor to make it a better mission. Still not one of my favorites.
You know what? You're absolutely right, Garrett. I completely did not pick up on this being that freaking mission. I love this mission. I love anyone where you burn the objectives.
I hate it.
Again, super.
Which is a very nice way of him saying that he hates it. And he hates your opinion about it, and he hates you, right? Geez, why are you so mean, Garrett?
Yeah, basically.
That's fair.
That's what I expect from him. I literally think that he adds bugs intentionally into my version of BCP. He's like, oh, here, John, try this out. A little special feature.
Also,
my phone is electrifying me and stuff.
I know your UDID by heart, John.
Yeah, I know. You're like, well, John, you know, and you're so open about it. You're like, here, John, here, you're going to share your UID with me so you can have this special version. But by the way, that gives me all power over your phone forever. So
now, we do have some announcements make about upcoming tournaments in our areas and beyond, you know, outside of the obvious Nova coming up in August, in late August. We do have, as always, T-Shift happening in Bellevue, Washington. That's a 40K major and a AOS GT. There's going to be quite a few players, a lot of good traveling players, a lot of familiar faces and names. I'm certainly going to be there. I hope some more hosts do end up showing up as well, but it's going to be a great time. It's going to be on August 3rd or 3rd and 4th. It'll be the first weekend in August. Again, Bellevue, Washington. Tickets are well available, as well as a few weeks, 2 weeks before that, or 3 weeks before that, we have OFCC in mid-August. That's going to be in Vancouver, Washington. It is going to be a good time. It's going to be a 40K GT, AOS GT, rather. And then we also do have... In just a few weeks, in late July, we do have in Spokane, Washington, in the Pacific Northwest, we have the Forge of Souls GT at Gamers Haven. So Gamers Haven is an amazing spot. Matthew will 100% be there. So if anyone wants to see a few of our pretty faces, then would be the time to, or any of the these events would be the time to check things out. Now, John, do you have any events that you'd like to plug? Any events coming up in your area? And how about you, Garrett?
Sure. Well, I do have a few events coming up, actually. Most of them are 40K, so just check out Firehead Productions for any of those 40K events, including the Game Castle Open in late July. Nice 40K GT. But as far as Age of Sigmar, I got Castle Conflagration number 19 coming up Sunday, August 18th. Happens to be the day before my birthday, so always like to do a little something fun there when I'm out gaming and partying, as it were. So hope to see all of you there. Again, August 18th for the Castle Conflagration 19 at Game Castle Mountain View. Find your tickets on BCP.
I will not be able to make the Castle Conflagration, not only because I don't want to fly to California just again for another tournament, but because I will be in Austin, Texas at Wargames Con, hosted by our great friend Jonathan. And then in July before that, I will be going up to, I believe, Gamers Haven, Pennsylvania in Phoenixville, and that'll be the Basement Wargamers Summer Slaughter. So I will be there. It is a sold out GT.
Perfect. So, well, you know, I'm sure you guys are going to have a blast. You know, we are going to be taking a closer look at General's Handbook one final time, just a little bit more in our next episode, but we'll have plenty else to review next week anyways. As always, it's been a pleasure talking with you today, John and Garrett, and this is Alex. We're all going to be signing off. Before you guys sign off yourselves and go about your busy lives, again, please be sure to like us on Facebook, rate us on Facebook and Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great night.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.